Paul Epps versus Belinda Epps, Mr. Petrie and Mr. Sprinkle.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. If I could have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right, that'll be fine.
May it please the court, Kevin Petrie for the appellant, Paul A.M. Epps. As set forth in the brief, this is a contested divorce case. Primarily, the appellant raises three issues to place before this court. Those are specifically denial of equitable distribution with regard to the appellee's Coast Guard retirement, an award of attorney's fees in favor of the appellee, and imputation of income to the appellant in the amount of $75,000 for child support purposes.
Let me ask you about the first issue, which I think I find the more interesting. It's clear that there's evidence that the wife has a military pension. It's less clear as to what component, if any, of that pension constituted any part of the marital estate. There's very little, if any, evidence that was introduced that would allow the court to figure out what portion is marital as opposed to not marital. Where does that leave us in reviewing the trial court's decision?
Yes, Your Honor. Primarily, our request with regard to the equitable distribution issue is that this court remand for further proceedings. And the evidence that was presented, Your Honor, was the appellee introduced her monthly statement as well as her annual 1099-R. The appellant testified that she was active duty when they married and that she did about 23 years. I have to work within the record, and there were a few questions that I likely would have asked.
It sounds to me like counsel just forgot about what he had to establish here.
What we don't have is essentially the date that she went out or she retired from the military, which would, since the 23 years was uncorroborated, my position would be.
Judge Petty beat me to the same question, but let me follow up on his question. You rely on the plain statutory language, use the word shall, that the court shall classify as either marital, separate, or hybrid property. But the statute also presupposes that somebody bring evidence to do that. You know, the court, you know, needs to have the evidence presented, and presumably the party seeking the distribution of the property has the burden of going forward with evidence that permits the court to properly classify the evidence. And as you point out, that wasn't done here. So I'm not sure what the approach would be, given the statutory language that the court must do it. But it seems to me that one possibility is that if the party with the responsibility for bringing forth the evidence to permit the court to do it doesn't do so, it's sort of a waiver, it seems to me, or at least a potential waiver of any complaint when the court fails to do so. So if you don't provide all the evidence the court can, and as you point out, there's some evidence that some portion of the military pension was accrued during the marriage, the benefit was accrued during the marriage, there is no evidence as to how much of it was with any specificity. So where does that leave us?
Well, Your Honor, what we have is the court clearly knew it was an issue before the court. If you look at the opening argument of counsel, which is not evidence, but trial counsel did indicate that appellant was seeking 37.5%. And when we look at the trial court's letter opinion, which was issued about 11 months after the actual trial, the equitable distribution is addressed in essentially a five-line paragraph. With regard to real properties, the trial court set forth that they are to be sold and split. This is on page 353 of the record. The last sentence states, all other issues counsel can compute based on the figures. I think what we have there, Judge, is a letter opinion that does not address insufficient evidence for the trial court to move forward. He said all other issues. Clearly, the retirement issue was discussed at length.
But was evidence put on to support any distribution of that pension? Was there evidence put on to establish that there was a marital share and what that amount was?
With regard to was there a marital share, I believe the answer would be yes, because the appellant did testify that she was active duty when they married. She deployed during the marriage. She went on underways during the marriage. With regard to your second question of how much should be the marital share, the question wasn't asked. I have to concede that point.
That seems to be the big problem here. It's almost as if everybody just forgot about this as being a potential asset, and then you're asking us to say that the trial court erred in failing to bring it up himself.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, if you look at and in the appellee's brief, the formula is addressed. The somewhat standard, for lack of a better word, formula that the trial courts have come to adopt is the months of marriage, which overlap with military service, divided by total months of military service, multiplied by one half, giving you that percentage that the military spouse generally will receive.
But counsel, I guess the question, though, is, is it the judge's responsibility to do something that counsel fails to do when making these considerations?
The judge's responsibility, Your Honor, I would say no. I don't think that the judge has an obligation necessarily to develop that testimony if counsel leaves it out. But when the judge knows that there's an issue before the court, which may not have been fully expounded upon, and then issues a letter of opinion that says all other issues, you have the figures, calculate them up.
How do you deal with the Bowers case, Bowers versus Bowers? You familiar with that case?
Judge, I believe that that was cited in Appellee's brief, if I recall.
It says in pertinent part, Virginia trial courts may, without doing violence to the code section, make a monetary award without giving consideration to the classification or valuation of every item of property where the parties have been given a reasonable opportunity to provide the necessary evidence to prove classification or valuation, but through their lack of diligence have failed to do so. Isn't that what we have here?
Your Honor, we do have it to a certain extent, but with Bowers, and I'm glad Your Honor brought it up, the court also stated that the trial court assigned insufficient evidence, quote, to determine entitlement or value, end quote, as its reason for excluding the, quote, retirement pension and profit sharing plan, end quote. Thus, we consider whether a trial court which has determined to grant a monetary award must consider the total value of the marital assets, or whether the court may, under certain circumstances, exclude the value of one or more marital assets in granting or calculating a monetary award. I believe what distinguishes that case there is that there we have the trial court stating that we have insufficient evidence, is how I read that. Obviously, I was not party or parcel to that particular case. But I think here the record is silent as to the trial court never found that there was insufficient evidence. The trial court issued a letter of opinion that said to all issues, counsel needs to calculate the numbers.
What did the order say? Because that will take precedence over the trial court's memo opinion, letter opinion. I think it just says they split everything where the property's in both their names and ED is denied as to anything else.
You are correct, Your Honor, but what it states is that...
I can't find it exactly.
It's on, I believe, 414 of the record. Shall be sold with the net proceeds, if any, being split equally, but save and accept reimbursement to a party of any and all credits for the funds expended by the party maintaining the properties. That said properties are to be sold within 5 months. Parties can buy each other out. That except as otherwise provided for herein, equitable distribution is denied to both parties.
Would you agree that the trial court in this case, had he recognized the existence of this military pension, could have said, and if he'd done it, you know, the order that the statute says, I'm going to classify this as part separate, part marital. I'm going to value it at X number, the marital share at X number of dollars, and I'm not going to divide it. I'm going to award it all to the wife.
By statute, the statute clearly states that the court may divide the pension. So, yes, the court could have done that. Had the court done that, I would still be before Your Honors arguing that was an abuse of discretion. Yes. What we have here is a no-fault divorce and no grounds for any spousal support awarded, as that was reserved, would be my argument at that point. Obviously, the hill that appellant must climb in this case, as Your Honors have clearly pointed out, is the preservation of the record and what was introduced to the trial court.
Before we get into your rebuttal, I want to ask you about the other issue, just to have one question about the attorney's fees award. And I guess my question would be, why don't we have a preservation of error issue with respect to the attorney's fees. As I, the objections that were noted to the final order were to the amount of the attorney's fees award and not to the issue you argue on appeal, which is the disparate income issue. So why isn't that appellate issue barred by 5A18?
Well, Judge, I believe the objection addendum, which was attached to the final decree, listed the third objection being the finding by the court that defendant was responsible for one half of plaintiff's attorney's fees and requiring the same to be paid in full within 8 months. Believe that that is somewhat open-ended. I don't believe that that excludes the argument. It could be more specific.
Well, it certainly doesn't include the one you're making. It seems to me I think a fair reading of it is you're objecting to the percentage, or in other words, the one half, not to the issue of the disparate income between the parties.
Yes, I believe again that it's somewhat vague and open-ended. It does not necessarily list the reason why. Unfortunately, the trial counsel is objecting. Simply states that she's objecting to the award. Your Honor interprets that to say that she's only objecting to the percentage, and perhaps if it was 25%, that there wouldn't be an objection. In crafting this argument, I have viewed it a little bit differently, that it's an objection to the award of one half. It could mean that we're not awarding any or a different percentage. And when we look at the trial evidence that was presented, that the appellant...
Well, let me phrase my question another way. Can you point to any place in the record where the disparate income issue with regards to the attorney's fees was ever raised in the trial court?
No, Your Honor, only the objection addendum that was attached to the final decree.
One last question. Your assignment of error that the appellant suffered from ineffective assistance of counsel, can you give me any cases that say that a party in a divorce proceeding has a constitutional right to effective assistance of counsel?
Your Honor, as I'm sure Your Honor would note reading the arguments made on brief, that was not a developed argument that was listed as some area. I would draw that assignment of error.
It saves us a lot of...
the final issue, Your Honor, would be the imputation of income, which I would put forth, Your Honors, was simply not founded in anything in the record. What we have is an individual who said at one point he had made in excess of $130,000 gross operating a business with multiple trucks picking up containers from the shipyard. But those vehicles at that point were inoperable, taken into the shop to be repaired. He lacked the financial means to get them back from the mechanic, and thus he was making $500 a week working for someone else. There was no impeachment of that testimony whatsoever. There was no contradictory testimony whatsoever. The trial court seemingly drew an imputation of $75,000 without a basis in the record whatsoever. Under Stubblebean and Calvert from this court, what must be shown is voluntary underemployment. And if someone's equipment is taken from them involuntarily, break down and then lack of financial means to get it back out, that's not voluntary underemployment to support imputation. Simply showing that the
counsel, just interrupt you and point out you're getting into your rebuttal time now. You can use it or
yes, Judge. I'm going to try to take these next 43 seconds and finish up. An explanation was given at trial to the income reduction. Same explanation that I've just stated, but the trial court imputed $75,000, and there was no evidence that.
Do we have a preservation argument here? I mean, your opponent asserts that nowhere in the record was this point ever preserved. So can you refute that?
Your Honor, what we have is the significant testimony as to the status of the vehicles, and then on the record at pages 210 to 211. Trial counsel stating, and I admit this is thin, but stating that the vehicles were basically in the shop and that was not our fault. That's the quote, not our fault. My position, Your Honors, is that her statement there shows that that is an argument that it's not voluntary underemployment. While extremely thin, and she did not use the words, I object to this, she did argue at the time, contemporaneously at trial, that it's not voluntary or underemployment. And with that, Your Honor, I would save 30 seconds for rebuttal.
I'll give you I'll give you a whole minute and rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sprinkle.
Hey, police court, thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'm Wayne Sprinkle. I represent the wife in this appeal, and we cited the Bowers case on the first issue that was raised by the husband in this case. And I would submit to you, I think in that case, in the Hodges case, the evidence insufficient. The husband was asking for the part of the retirement. He didn't prove it. He had the burden of proof. He didn't do it.
He established the existence of the pension. He established that a component of that pension was earned during the marriage and thus part of the marital estate. And there was evidence of, I think, of what the monthly payment on that pension was.
Mm-hmm.
So the court had before it the existence of marital property, and it failed to classify value and divide as required by the statute.
Well, I don't think the evidence was shown of value. I would disagree with that. The value is what part of that pension was he entitled to as a hybrid award, and he would have to show when she went into service, from the time she got married to the time she retired. That would be the numerator over the number of years.
I would agree with you. If the trial court had said this is part. I'm finding that classifying this as partially marital, partially separate. But I find there's no evidence of the value of the marital component, so therefore I'm not going to divide it. But he never took the first step that's required.
Well, he didn't say that. I mean, the record speaks for itself. But is he required to do so? Is he required to when the value is not there, and if you don't classify it, you don't value it, and you don't distribute it? Is a circuit court judge in a divorce case supposed to put all those things out and say in the order, this was raised, but no value was shown or proven? The classification I don't have to touch because there's no value here. You have to prove all three things. And I would submit that value wasn't shown. I don't think the burden is on the judge to do that. And you have the Bowers case, and you have the Hodges case there that says what it says. And I don't think you should remand this case. I mean, they've had their shot. They had a trial that went on all day, and this case should not be remanded. I think this first argument should be denied. I'd also submit to you, I don't think this argument, it's also procedurally barred. There's no specific timely objection made as to this argument. I would submit to you, in the divorce order or any other place.
There's no motion to reconsider filed.
No, sir. So I submit to you that it also bars that. The burden of proof, again, was on the husband. He was asking for that. As for the counsel fees argument, assignment of error, there was no objection that specifically made that we see in the brief that was made in the divorce order or any place else. So the trial judge never had a chance to encounter that objection as to attorney's fees. And again, they didn't even object to the attorney's fees at trial. They were submitted. No one objected to them. And the same thing for the argument about to impute certain income to the husband for child support purposes. That wasn't objected to in the divorce order or at trial or any other place. So I think that's waived too. We're asking you to not remand the case except for attorney's fees, costs, and printing costs in this case. We don't think there's anything novel or new about this case. I think it's controlled by precedent and the rules of this court. And I think the wife deserves an award of attorney's fees and costs in this case.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Petrie?
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, with regard to the statement that no objection was made at trial to introduction of the attorney's fees, it was an exhibit being put in. The foundation was laid. That there was no reasonable objection to be made. That comes in argument, which, if I can step back and look at the procedural history, we have a letter of opinion being issued about 11 months after the date of trial. At that point, that was the first time that the trial judge, had ever stated we're going to impute income or we're going and had an equal distribution paragraph stating that all other issues, you need to run the figures and calculate. If there's an issue, docket it. At that point, trial counsel for the appellant did docket a motion with regard to the military retirement. Ultimately, that motion was denied. But that is in the record. The argument is in the record that motion was heard by the trial court and ultimately denied. That was the first opportunity that the trial counsel for appellant had to address that issue with the court, because when the letter opinion came out, it said all other issues calculate amongst counsel. That proved ineffective, and the motion was at that point docketed. And again, with regard to the attorney's fees, I believe it was preserved by the objection addendum placed into the final decree. And with that, I ask that your honors reverse and remand this case for further proceedings, and I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We'll come down and greet counsel, and the court will be adjourned. All right.